Hello there, and welcome to the podcast. It's John Markar here, and I thought I'd just jump in with a very quick but very important message that I wanted to share with you before you delve into this episode of the Driven Chat podcast. This podcast, the Driven Chat podcast, has now come to an end. But don't worry, I'm not going to stop you from listening to this episode or from catching up with the 185 episodes that we've recorded in this format. I just wanted to let you know that if you're looking for our new episodes recorded after December 2023, then you'll need to seek out our new podcast, The Driven Podcast. You can find The Driven Podcast in all the usual podcast platforms, including, chances are, the one that you're listening to this one on right now. So please do enjoy this episode, share it with a friend by all means. But when it's done, don't forget to search for the new podcast, The Driven Podcast, and subscribe to the new format to hear the new stuff. To make life easy, head on over to the Driven website via driven.site. There you will find links through to the new podcast, including links to your preferred podcast platform. And hey, whilst you're there, why not check out everything else we do, including hand-picked automotive news stories, car and bike reviews, video features, and even more. For now, though, I'll let you enjoy this episode, and I will remind you again at the end of the episode, but for the future reference, this message is approximately 1 minute and 30 seconds long. That's 6 clicks on the 15-second skip button. Enjoy!
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So my name's James Cameron, and I'm the chief executive of Mission Motorsport, the Forces Motorsport charity.
The Driven Chat podcast in association with Paramex Digital. You dream it, we bring it to life. Find out more at drivenchat.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's Driven Chat podcast. My name is John Markar, and I am recording as ever in one of the bedrooms at Cafe and Machine. But this week I'm flying solo. We have no Andy J, we have no Amy Shaw. It's just me and some car background noises. But it's not just me, obviously, because we have a guest, as you've just heard from. We have a gentleman who I've now known. In fact, I was trying to do the maths on this on the drive here, and I purposefully didn't put too much thought into it because I thought we could try and break it down together.
Wow.
I sat with me Jim Cameron. You introduced yourself as James, but I've known you forever as Jim.
Yeah.
In fact, when I first met you, I think you were either Captain Jim or Major Jim.
Yeah, I think it might have been Captain. It was quite a while ago.
It must be at least 10 years.
Yeah, no, it's a lot longer than that. It's a lot longer than that, which is kind of terrifying to think about, isn't it? Anyway, and now I've been lured into a bedroom by you.
I know. It's only taken me 13 years.
Yeah, that's great. And you got me here because you promised Amy Shaw. That's it.
I know. And where's Amy? Do you know where Amy actually is? She's training her new dog.
Oh, that's so cool.
She's just got a collie.
That's the best thing ever.
Yeah, so she is excused for that reason.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, well, Brian, my dog, is not here with us today.
Oh, yes, of course. Brian, brilliant little Brian.
Brian is great, but I came here in a stupid car, which Brian, well, probably wouldn't be that bothered about, but the owners of the very stupid car probably would be if I put a Staffordshire Bull Terrier in.
So. Well, we'll mention that very special car, because that is definitely, ultimately, it's the reason we're here today, isn't it? To talk about that special car and perhaps a few other things.
Sure.
But let's give a quick introduction to you and who you are and what you do. You say you're the... God, what's the job title now? I can't remember.
CEO. So
CEO.
I'm the
CEO of Mission Motorsport.
I run the Forces Motorsport charity.
Fantastic.
Which, it terrifyingly is nearly 10 years old. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm confident that, yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You were still in uniform.
Yeah, right. No, absolutely. So I was still in uniform 10 years ago. I was still in uniform just about sort of 8 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
Crikey. Anyway, so Mission Motorsport was formed as the Forces Motorsport charity, 1st of March 2012. So we're just approaching our 10th anniversary, or sort of decade of delivery, which is really quite terrifying to consider, really. And you wonder where the last 10 years has gone past in such a blur. And it was founded really because I was a bit broken, I think, as a result sort of accumulation of tours and time away and a collection of other stuff. So I've got two kids, and so it's Holly's birthday today. She's 11. It was Tom's birthday, who's 15. And both of them are kind of walking reminders of, you know, for Holly, sort of last time I was in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. She was born when I was out there. And Tom, you know, similarly, again, you know, and I was away. And I served for 17 years, and I, you know, did a chunk of operational tours during that time. But it was the last time I was out there was commanding the armored group in Afghanistan, in Helmand province, mm-hmm. in 2010 into 2011. And I've always used my, because I'm a massive petrol head and always have been, and used those military connections in a motorsport audience or motorsport connections in a military audience to kind of raise money for charity. Mm-hmm. And of course, service charities sort of featured quite highly throughout my career. So, you know, and we did everything from turn Bovington tank tracks, which most famously and recently used as the venue for Formula E's.
That's right, yeah.
What did they call it?
The Jurassic Coast. It's not Formula E, is it? It's the...
Extreme E.
Extreme E.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So the Jurassic competition, because they're looking around desperately going, you know, I really hope it isn't foggy when this happens. And of course, it was massively foggy when it happened. But there are... tank tracks there as well, which aren't off-road. They're concrete tank tracks, which we turned into probably the world's most dangerous track day venue. I think that was something like back in 2008 or 2009 in order to go and run an event there at that time. And I've always used that to raise money for service charities. When I came back from Afghanistan in 2011, had a lot of people who'd been impacted.
Yeah.
And both the obvious sort of amputees that everybody kind of thinks about when we think about sort of that era of Iraq and Afghanistan. But it was not just them, but it was the families and also some of those that you just see struggling with mental health and just being a bit worn out and worn down and depleted, yeah. really, as much as. And of course, any kind of sport can be wonderful and restorative and healing and, you know, turn people's lights on. Mm. And I found myself knowing lots about motorsport and just a bit frustrated how there were lots of things happening, but it was a bit like the Wild West. There was no regulation or structure around it. And in some instances, it was doing more harm than good. And if you dangle a thing under a lad's nose, you know, do you want to come and do the Dakar? Yeah. Do you want to go to Le Mans? Do you want to, you know, come and race a Ferrari? They will throw themselves at it wholeheartedly, but they're also at a point where they're probably at their most vulnerable in their lives.
Yeah.
They might even be technically a vulnerable adult as far as legislation is concerned. And if you take somebody hill rallying because they're on the promise because they want to go and do Dakar, which of course, you know, is running at the moment, you know, what an amazing thing for them to go and do. But if you have a double amputee who's back in Queen Elizabeth's Hospital in Birmingham, having extra bits sawn off them as a result of an infection that they've received because they're hill rallying in Scotland in really bad conditions and there's no medical risk assessment in place, you're not helping them. Mm-hmm. And seeing, you know, that's not an apocryphal example, that was a real example, and things like that, kind of boiled my piss, I think, is the, if you excuse the language.
Yeah.
And I really kind of wanted to make sure that you could use that love of the automobile is incredibly powerful and wonderful. And to use that as a tool for good has been really what it's all about. But it has to be done with responsibility because it's such a powerful draw. And you've got to have the right duty of care in place. Mm-hmm. So it's fine to go and look at an Everest of sport. But if you're looking at an Everest of sport and then looking around going, right, what blokes can we find to allow, you know, to put together a team to go and do something inspirational, you've got to have a big proportion of your effort has to be dedicated towards looking after the blokes themselves.
Yeah.
And it's not to look after them to allow them to do the Everest of sport, it's to allow them to do the thing that comes after, or to support their families, or to, you know, and that means that you've got to have a role that is more about duty of care and it's more about looking after people. And that was what Mission Motorsport was formed to do.
Yeah.
And that race, retrain, recover is all about, it's sport, but it's using the sport as a tool in order to ultimately help people support their own families. And that's what the organisation does to this day. And it's just a bit weird talking about it, thinking that it's sort of 10 years on.
10 years on, indeed. Yeah, I mean, I remember the early days very clearly. I remember this exciting idea. And I remember it being, it's probably a thought train that's evolved considerably since then. But I think I remember you recalling the fact that, certainly for your regiment, it's a very close-knit community. You've got blokes in often one vehicle, spending a lot of time together. You're all very close, getting very intimate and smelly together. And then, of course, there comes a time where everyone goes home, all being well, everyone goes home. And that question of, well, what do we do next? And you've got a lot of guys that come to the end of their time serving in the armed forces or in the army. And it's what to do with them. And I remember you saying that these were guys that you developed a real bond with, of course, which of course you're going to do. And for you, it was more a case of you just wanted to make sure that there was something next for them to do.
Yeah, man, that's certainly true. And it's not just that you know you don't just know them. You've probably got a pretty good idea of their families and, you know, the names of their kids or their dog and where they should be going in terms of their career trajectory. And for the ones that have fallen by the wayside for whatever reason, they can often need help. And I think the armed forces are amazing and deeply weird. I mean, it's an absolute joy that we have them for all of the great things that they do. But it's a very different culture that's entirely based around that team achieving things and the organization, the group, as opposed to the individual within it. And then they step out into a world which is very different in today's society. Of course, I mean, the Second World War, on the back of the First World War, you had two generations of people who went through incredible deprivation. And then that sort of depression of the 1950s that people kind of found their way through. And you dig into it and you find sort of stories of people kind of really struggling. But, you know, people talking about stuff like PTSD or a sort of disassociation disorder, working out where they fit in with society, wasn't something that was as spoken about or as well understood as perhaps it is now, or sort of part of the lexicon. But you had an entire generation of people, whether they'd gone away or not, who knew what it was to have gone to war, who had suffered. You know, I mean, we still had... I was talking to an elderly relative the other day who was talking about rationing, and I'm like, well, hang on, what year was this? And it was like 1953. So we still had rationing in 53. You know, people had sent their children out of the cities to go and be educated in, you know, to strange families to make them safe from bombing. So you had all of these blokes who came back who were profoundly impacted by what they'd experienced, which is an entirely human reaction. But they came back to a society that had also been profoundly impacted. And I think that degree of understanding was kind of there. And lots of the stuff which happened around then, pub culture, sport as the centre of a lot of things, volunteering used for stuff, are the things that are nowadays largely being, are on the wane because they're being replaced by, you know, Netflix, Xbox, supermarket booze delivered to your doorstep. You haven't even gone to the supermarket to be able to go and get it. And you lose some of those things that are around community. But, you know, here we are, we're sat in Caffeine and Machine, which is something that, you know, sort of Phil and Dan's vision since the beginning, I never really understood. Because I remember coming here when, you know, we were still pulling the kitchen apart at the back and the old bar was still downstairs. And and you just thought, what has this madman done? But he had this weird vision about how it would be the center and the catalyst for lots of great things to happen. And he knew that if you put the right thing in the middle, then community would form around it. And it's... we use that same sort of thing. If we can help people to feel part of a community and feel supported, that bit where you leave the forces is a bit of a shock. And a lot of guys and girls will not struggle at all. They will, you know, they'll get out and they might bounce off a couple of things on the way, but they'll go and be great successes. But for those that falter, organizations like ours are the ones that are there to just try and help them to find the help that they need.
Yeah.
and a lot of which we don't provide, but there's a very simple conceit at the centre of Mission Motorsport, particularly on the recovery sports side, which is if you sort of say to people, hey, you know, do you want to come in March, where it's probably going to be drizzling, to a former RAF base to meet lots of people that you don't know, you haven't necessarily served with, you know, you might not like a few of them, and then we're going to scare the living daylights out of you. And then we're going to patronise you. We're going to ask you some questions about the state of your relationship, your home, your financial life, all of the rest of it, and how you're getting on with that. We'll do some mechanical tasks with you that you might find either massively beyond you or way beneath you. And we're all going to have a group hug and talk about PTSD. They wouldn't come near you with a barge pole. No. Like, they're not interested. But if you say, you know, who wants to come to Silverstone, meet Jenson Button and learn to drift? And you're managing the queue.
Yeah.
And what we're actually doing with people is, of course, all of the things that I mentioned before. And we're kind of quite open and honest about it. Mm. And in that way, actually, we get the most lovely kind of responses from people. And it can be a really useful draw. The thing that has developed, so, I mean, you remember those kind of early days. Race, Retrain, Recover has been there since the beginning. You always knew you could use sport to be able to help people, ultimately to support their families. Mm. And we had some really good examples of people who'd done that from really sort of early work, you know, where we'd managed to be really successful. What we hadn't anticipated was just how much that could grow and how it could become a model for other industry areas as well, which is quite extraordinary for us.
It is, and it is incredible. Having, again, as a bystander, someone that's been around watching from the wings since the early days, it's been amazing to watch how everything has evolved, not only how the charity has grown, but how, as you say, those your comments about just bringing a little glimpse of normality to people. Mm. We've done so many of these wonderful days where the Invitational Track Days is a perfect example. So to explain this to you, the listener, we put together these days where we might hire a circuit, say Goodwood.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of guys and girls will get invited who have fairly interesting cars. And the premise of you're invited to come and drive on this track day on the one condition that you give up your passenger seat for the day. So what you end up doing is giving 3 or 4 hot laps to a beneficiary of the charity. And I think my first day doing it, I remember thinking, well, I assumed that I'd be driving around blokes and girls, amputees, PTSD sufferers exclusively, and that would be it, and I'd be struggling to know what to talk about. But of course, the reality of the day is you get there, and yes, you have got some guys and girls that have suffered some physical injuries.
Yeah.
You've got an awful lot of guys and girls that have suffered some mental injuries, perhaps not quite word to use, but things like PTSD. But you've also got the girlfriends, the wives, the dads, the mums, the kids in some respects, which is exciting. And it wasn't just a day to give the servicemen and women a day out. It was a day to bring a family together. And I recall, I think my very first day, it must have been a Goodwood day, and I had this bizarre, because you work through a queue. There's a queue of beneficiaries with a queue of cars. You never know who you're going to get paired up with. You're sat there in your car, so I'm there in my car, helmet on, harnesses on. Somebody will open the door and go, right, this is Dave. Dave's going to sit in with you. Off you go. And for 4 laps, you get to know Dave, and Dave gets to know you, and you have a chat. And I think this guy's name was Dave, and bearing in mind, probably had 10 before, there would have been 10 after. And the 11th after Dave was Dave's girlfriend.
Oh, wow.
And Dave's girlfriend had been with Dave since he was serving. Dave had been through a pretty hard time. He'd lost a few friends. He was having a really, really difficult time. But it was great driving with Dave. Had a wonderful chat. The amazing thing for me was Dave's girlfriend, who got in the car. She didn't say anything. And I said, you know, I like to work on a system of hand signals.
Yes.
It all gets a bit noisy. So if you're having a good time, I'll give you a little thumbs up. Just reply with a thumbs up. If you hate it, just give me a thumbs down and I'll know to slow down. We drove around. She was saying nothing. There was no squeals, no screams, nothing. So I gave the little everything okay
thumbs
up.
They're always the weird ones, aren't
they?
Yeah. You're trying to gauge. Yeah. Is this okay?
Anyway, we'd gone round, thumbs up, got the thumbs up back. Right, that was fine. It was on the cool down lap as we were coming in. I looked across. I said, are you having a good day? Everything okay? She said, yeah. She said, you know what? This is such an amazing day. And there I was thinking she was talking about my driving. Obviously, she wasn't.
Yeah.
She said it's the first time.
Your line into Ford Water, she said, was the best she's ever seen. since the first revival. She's never seen anybody go in that committed in an M coupe. Yeah. Sorry, we went off at a tangent, but we'll come back.
Yeah, if only. No, and what she said, you know, today's been such an amazing day because it's the first time I've seen Dave come back to life in the sense of he's so happy. He's surrounded by like-minded guys and girls. He's surrounded by cars, which he loves. He's been out in everything from, I think there was a Carrera GT, I think there was a McLaren F1 on this particular day. We had the most incredible collection of cars.
Yeah, and then you'd have, an Invitational, so you'd also have the odd Bentley Blower there.
Yeah.
Bugatti 35B, you know, a couple of other bits and pieces as well.
It's like the most bonkers track day environment ever. Because, yeah, as you say, you've got everything. But that comment stuck with me so massively, more so than the conversations that I'd had. And a lot of the guys and the girls will open up massively in that space of time. Yeah. And I don't know if it's because it's, you know, you're in there for three or four laps, which equates to maybe 6 minutes and tops from the time you've pulled out the pit lane to the time you get back in and you shake hands. Thanks very much. Have a great day. See you later. And in that time, you can gauge so much about somebody. You can see where they're struggling. And some people don't want to talk about stuff and some people do. And you just embrace whatever people want to talk about.
Absolutely.
And it's such an incredible, I'm always, always delighted to do these days. Because
It's one of the things. So, I mean, I go and do the safety brief at the beginning. Well, I don't do the whole of the safety brief. So I let, you know, I'll let somebody who's got a finer eye for detail than I do gets to do that. But I'll go and sort of read the riot act at the beginning. And you make really clear to those who are driving these guys and girls around, you know, you're responsible for bringing them back in the same state that they went away or better. You know, so we can't have any offs or pissing about, all the rest of it. Driving standards have to be really high. But the big thing I encourage people to do is to talk to them. Mm. So, you know, use the time in order to be able to talk to them. And it's something about, so you drop somebody and, you know, I mean, examples like that day, you know, we will have minibuses come up from Plymouth, from the recovery centres down there. We'll have folk come down from Glasgow, you know, Kez Bradley's been down a couple of times, you know, and collecting people on the way. So you've got beneficiaries sharing rides coming from across the country to coalesce on the south coast at Goodwood, in that example, for that day. And you've got all of these wonderful people who've come from all of that distance. For the drivers, I'm like, you know, if you paid tax, get your money's worth. You know, go and have a conversation with these people. Find out where your tax money's gone, because, you know, that's what sent them abroad and given them the education they have. But it gets rid of all the barriers, doesn't it? So there's a thing, you know, if you try and get men to talk, they'll really struggle. But if you give them a fishing rod, then they'll talk all day and they'll sit because you've given them a purpose and a task to do. And then suddenly they can do it. Days like the Invitational are that, but taken on to a different level. Because everything from helping somebody get into a car to getting strapped into what the hell is this? Who the hell are you? What are we doing here? What brings you here? You get rid of so much of, and you're not facing each other, you're sat alongside each other.
That's right, yeah.
And you've got a helmet on, and it all feels quite alien, but it's exciting and it's brilliant, and that tends to get, and if they're not talking to you before, by God, they're talking to you at the end. You know, you come in and you just have that wonderful sort of shared experience, which is great. And it helps people just open up. And the Invitational is just a socialization exercise at its most simple. And you're putting together populations of people whose Venn diagram would never cross otherwise. And we do it with increasing amounts of deliberacy in terms of making sure that the former Royal Marine who is really lost meets the bloke who is formerly a Royal Marine, who's now tremendously successful, or has the family history in that sort of way. You know, and we've had... So through the Invitational, I think we ran the 8th Invitational at Goodwood recently, which was just a joyous event to be able to run, because you look back on those and the number of people who found jobs through it, the number of people who found training opportunities through it, the number of people, actually the wives got employed through it, because you just join that up, they're settling into the right part of the world and you've got, you know, somebody in a Ferrari, but they're a big employer. These are all captains of industry, you know, all of the rest of it. And that, so you're joining different bits and pieces up like that. And we've even had, you know, sort of people fall in love and then have children through it. And that's really weird when you've got genuine sort of generations of activity like that. And at the core of it all, it's just a track day. That's all it is. I mean, it's not, you know, how special can it be? But it's the way in which we design it. And as things like that have sort of progressed and got bigger, Race of Remembrance is an incredible sort of ultimate example of that. At the end of the day, though, that's just a race weekend. Mm-hmm. But all of the stuff that we play around the outside of it makes it feel very different. And to be honest, that's part of my job, is to make sure that the commercial interests or anything else don't ever eclipse what is at its core ultimately all about human beings and interactions in between people, which is fundamentally what it's all about. And it's the thing that we can still do, and we do really, really well. So, yeah, I think we've got a lot of pride in those events. But it's such a cool way as a charity to be able to bring people right up alongside your work and not tell them what it's about. They see for themselves because they go away from it. Yeah, and they know what it's all about. That's
it. And I bet those conversations in the minibuses on the way home are electric in comparison to the conversations on the way to the circuit.
Yeah, completely. And that's what that race, retrain, recover thing. So if you can light that light bulb off, if you can set that up, and it doesn't, it's not about putting people into jobs in automotive industry. I couldn't care less where they end up working. Yeah. As long as they're happy. And as long as it works. I mean, so one of our guys really early on, he'd done, Will Madden was sort of quite a famous example because he'd been blown up earlier in the year in 2011. It was around about this time. Will had been blown up, age 19, and then he'd found himself plucked to go to, I think we were at Donington. So we did a round of the Lotus Elise Trophy, thanks to support of sponsors, with another guy who'd been blown up. Will Madden was one of the guys who was on the crew for that. As the race team were trying to leave at the end of the day, they couldn't get the ramp at the back of the truck to work properly.
Right.
And this lad, 19 years old, well, I think he'd be 20 by that point. They'd done a bit of hydraulics on his learn to drive a tank course, basically. And so he took the back off the truck, tinkered about, made it work. The race team thought he was fantastic because they got to go home on the Sunday and didn't have to do another night in a hotel and go back on the Monday. And they gave us a ring a couple of weeks later and said, look, we're down a mechanic for Barcelona. Would he like to come?
Wow.
And so he went out and did the Barcelona 24. He flew back. His mum washed his kit for him and he reported straight to Silverstone. And he was the number one right-hand wheelman, being trained up by Jota to run a Works MX-5. And this is 2011. So, this was really, really sharp when we'd sort of come back. And then was offered a job at 3 a.m. by Sam Hignett, the head of Jota, who went, you know, I get any number of applications from, you know, blokes who've got a degree in motorsport engineering from the University of God knows where, but at, you know, 3 a.m, and he'd seen how these guys were performing, you know, that's what I want, you know, I want you. And it's at times like that, that was the real formative time for, you know, Mission Motorsport didn't exist at that time, and you just go, crikey, this is great. Mm. We can't just let it be an accident. One of the other guys who was part of that team with him was also leaving the army tail end of that year, and his wife had said to him, "We're not moving house." So the army's had us, and we've moved X number of times. Where we live right now, which is near Tidworth, so Thruxton, basically one of the closest villages to Thruxton, Shipton, Bellinger. Kids are happy in school. I like where we're living. I'm not moving the kids' school. You need to get a job, which allows us to stay living in Shipton Bellinger, which, of course, is kind of an expensive part of the world. So he used his resettlement credits to retrain as a plumber.
Right.
And then had applied for this job as recently qualified plumber. 120 people had applied for the same job, and it was with Aspire, who did facilities management, actually, for the big barracks there. And it was during his interview, and he had a letter from Bob Neville, who runs RJN, so currently Jenson Button's race team, but formerly, ran all of the Nissan Work GT3 race output. And they sort of went, you know, why the hell have you got? Because his CV was rubbish, you know, because it sort of went to school, bit of a gap, just trained as a plumber, some army in the middle that no one understands. But why on earth have you got a letter of recommendation from Bob Neville? And someone on that panel knew a bit of endurance racing, and right. So they just talked about endurance racing for his 20 minutes of fame that he had in his interview, and he was the one who got the job over and above the 100 and tiddly pond people who'd apply for it. which allowed him to keep his family in the same place, got a house in Shipton Bellinger, kids stayed in school, all the rest of it. And he was, I don't care what they end up doing. They don't all have to end up working for, you know, Jaguar Land Rover or Aston or Lotus or any of those things. You know, they don't have to work in the automotive industry. I don't care. But it's whatever you can do to help them network, see themselves in a different light, and and wake up in the morning with a sense of purpose and meaning.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Meaning that I think that's all of us want, isn't it?
Absolutely right. Absolutely. Yeah.
The Driven Chat podcast in association with Paramex Digital.
So let's talk about that employment side of things. Because obviously that ultimately was a happy accident, wasn't it? That process of getting somebody in right place, right time. I can do that. Hands-on tools, done.
Yeah.
And that resulted in a job. Employment for the charity as part of its purpose, that was a big part of the initial programme, wasn't it? It was also, again, going back to you've got your blokes in your vehicles.
Yes.
You know they're coming to the end of their career and you want to know that they've got somewhere to go. Yeah. When they get their final letter, you know, it's time for you to go. What do you do next? And I guess you were commanding officer, weren't you? You were head of the...
Well, I've done some weird tank stuff. So my formal education, leading armoured formations in the desert. So I'm pretty comfortable at doing some of that stuff. But there aren't many jobs commanding Challenger 2s in civilian strength.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it,
which is a shame.
Frankly, it's something I bemoan every day. There's, but it's sort of getting out of that mindset and realizing that there's loads of opportunities for Challenger 2 tank commanders.
Yes.
In civvy streets. It's just none of them happen to be having anything to do with Challenger 2. Yeah. So, and it's changing people's sort of mindset. And the other thing is trying to help the outside world to kind of recognize that these people are a bit different culturally. And that actually puts them at a disadvantage for some. So civilian HR techniques are, you know, rely heavily on stuff like the CV or the psychometric testing questions, you know, which are set around things, and performance at interview. And our blokes, you know, from the moment they join the military, there's some differences in between different bits of the three services. So I'll generalise, but... On week one, day one of training, they're stopping you talking about I and instead talk about we. Mm-hmm. And so it's really difficult when somebody's come through, and it's very countercultural to big yourself up to talk about how you were the inspirational character. You were the only one who's done this. You were the only one who's done the other. And that, talking about yourself in the first person on such a level, is very much how you go about producing a powerful CV, answering the punchy interview questions, gives an example of where you were the pivotal one who did this, that, and the other. And if the first word out of your mouth is we, it kind of weakens it. And we've had some really good examples of this of late, of service folk who were just completely inarticulate at being able to express what they do, have done, and are able to do. Because... in the army, I never wrote about myself in the first person. Mm-hmm. Even as an officer and coming through, you don't do it on your annual reporting, you don't do it on a promotion course, you don't do it, you know, as a qualification, you never write about yourself in the first person. The only time you would do it is if you are told, dicked to, you know, write an article for the regimental journal, at which point all of your mates will take the piss out of you and you'll get crated for it because there's a picture of you in the regimental journal and you talked about yourself. So it's really countercultural then to be able to put, you know, to shoehorn that into HR process. And there's always a bit of the military trying to educate its people at the end of their career to be able to do the HR stuff, to write a good CV and to be able to perform well at interview. And it's almost always delivered by civilians. And indeed, military people are the worst people at doing it. So it should be delivered by civilians and therefore is regarded with a certain amount of distrust by those who've served. And it also, and ultimately starting from a position which is behind where there others would be, because it's very countercultural. So some of the work we've been really successful with, and an example of this was Jaguar Land Rover. So, I mean, JLR sponsored the first Invictus Games in 2014, which was amazing. And the first Invictus Games came along and was a surprise to everybody, not least MOD. And it was genuinely because Prince Harry went over to the States, visited the Warrior Games, and completely went off script. So the press loved him because he went and did what Harry does brilliantly, which was he went and sort of spent time with the blokes and girls. And he's incredibly good. He's very at home with that sort of thing. He's incredibly personable. And the Americans found that really quite strange because they weren't expecting a prince to relate well with. And Harry stood up and at the end of it went, you know, we're very much looking forward to welcoming you all back to the UK to a similar event very soon. And consequently was carpeted when he came back by Colonel David Norris, who ran disabled and adaptive sport in the MOD, who was like, what the hell have you committed us to? This doesn't exist. It doesn't have a name. We don't have a budget. No one knows what this looks like. And that was on the Monday. On the Thursday, Colonel David Norris was called into Kensington Palace in order to explain how the MOD was going to realise Prince Harry's vision for this Games for the Wounded in the UK. It came about really fast. Jaguar Land Rover had absolutely lent into it, their presenting partner. And as a result, you've got things like, and it worked really well for them. You know, it was fantastic. And there was a certain amount of that being pulled apart afterwards. And I interrupted a very high level meeting. It was the HR director was saying, look, in line with the chief executive's direction, we are absolutely committed to hiring people from this source. You know, we're committed to veterans and particularly those who are wounded, injured and sick. And I was the one who put my hand up at the back of the room and said, look, really interesting you say that, but your HR processes are custom designed to exclude service people. You just don't realise you're doing it. And there was this awful silence in the room. Everyone turns around like, who's this guy? But a lot of those sort of HR things, if you're screening by degree, if you're screening by prior industry experience, if you're screening by any of the measures which would disadvantage our foreign and Commonwealth soldiers, then you're screening out a whole source of quality people because you're using the wrong tools to kind of do it. So what we've been really quite successful at is being able to help industry to develop mechanisms so that they can fish for the quality in a pool that otherwise their processes would kind of exclude them from. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in times when we're approaching full employment in the country, you know, if you want a job right now, there are options for you. You know, there is lots of opportunity out there. To be able to fish from that pot of quality people is really attractive to companies. So if we can make the commercial case for a company to bother to do armed forces engagement, and we can show them how if they link their CSR policy to an HR activity, if they link corporate behavior, brand behavior, to stuff that works well across other areas of the business, it's something that can be really positive for them. And of course, JLR, you know, very much seen as exemplars of it, which are fantastic. And, you know, I didn't turn up here today because a beneficiary turned up here today in driving it. You know, you're seeing a Lotus as this next generation poppy car. There's a whole host of other companies out there that are doing just fantastic work, some really good stuff. And to be honest, that, rather than the sort of engaging, you know, track days with your mates bit, I don't get to do that very much. I spend an awful lot of time, you know, doing PowerPoint presentations, Teams calls, you know, and hoofing around the country talking to across the automotive industry.
Yeah. That transition of getting blokes into jobs in the civilian world, how's that evolved? And the reason I asked that is because, so you mentioned that brilliant... You gave a brilliant anecdote about that inability not so much an inability, but just lack of experience in having any self-promotion, yeah, as you say, going absolutely. In and talking about me, myself, and I. There's one story in particular that is very close to home for me, and I hope James won't mind me mentioning his name, but James Webley.
Yeah. Is, I've heard of him.
You might have met James. Yeah, James Webley, who I think at the time where James was on your books as one of the blokes,
yeah,
came fresh out of the army. He did some work for the charity for a bit, didn't he?
He was our workshop manager for 18 months, yeah.
Yeah, and then am I right in saying he was one of the first, or if not the first, officially put into employment through the programme?
I think he was certainly our first into SVO. He was the first to go across that, yeah, which was very cool.
So I didn't know James particularly well at that point. And again, this is where we mentioned the very small world of the automotive space time and time again on our podcast, but this is a key example of this. So James and I didn't know each other, but at this point I knew you and I had been doing stuff with the charity. James was very much part of the charity, so we would have been in the same place at the same time doing certain things, but James and I have now become very, very good friends. In fact, to the point where for a good few years we were living meters apart from each other.
He hasn't touched you, has he?
He has, but it's all been consensual, so that's okay. That's okay. And he won't mind me telling that story another time.
No, it's the beard.
It is the beard, yeah. It is. But James, so the reason I wanted to mention James is because of that. There's a wonderful story about James's first day on the job in his civilian role, where James had gone into SVO in a fairly senior role.
Yeah.
Engineering, building some of the most incredible cars. And again, I think this was at a time where SVO was still a fairly new brand for the car world.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
It was like, oh, Jaguar Land Rover has suddenly got an M division or an AMG division. They're making the best of the best.
Skunk Works department doing cool stuff, yeah.
And I think James went in on his first day, got into a shouting match with somebody, slapped a mobile phone out of somebody else's hand.
Yes, he did, yes. Yeah, he did. And had met the union representative by the end of the day. Because I got a phone call going, what's the union representative? I'm like, oh my God, what have you done?
But that is a perfect example of, I think, just how...
It's a bit of changing culture.
A very big changing culture. And I think this is something that so many people fail, unless you've had exposure to military or you've got friends and family that have served. And you've been through that transition of going from a military mindset where it is a team, everything's about team, everything's about a community of people. If something needs to get done, it just gets done. Yeah. There's no, you don't have six meetings about it.
No.
You don't go through a process of, oh, well, let's just see what HR say. Let's just see if I can run it past health and safety. You just get it done. You get the job done. So for a lot of people, this is one of the hardest parts. It's suddenly going into that very first day. You've got through the interview bit. You've got through the presentation bit. That's all that stuff's really, really difficult. And suddenly you're there in this job with a load of people that don't think the way that you think.
Yeah.
You want to get something done. And when it's not getting done in the way you want to get it done, and you're of rank, because you're perhaps a slightly higher up on the payroll than they are, you shout in the way that you have been shouted at and shouted at others for many years. And it doesn't work like that, does it?
Oh, I don't. Yeah, I mean, there's not that much shouting really happens in the military these days. They're extremely fluffy, but it can be frustrating because people's responses to things are different, and the way in which they're wired are different. The way we get around it is, so Webber's was fantastic during his, and I mean, he did best part of 2 years. So I mean, he built a bunch of things, didn't he? So he was on the tail end of Project 8, but then was building the I-Pace race cars that were racing in support to Formula E. Did a bunch of really cool stuff when he was there. And he was one of the guys that we were then leaning on to host people who were going on placements. Mm-hmm. So they were getting the opportunity to go and have a look behind the scenes to sort of learn a bit about what it sort of means to be a civilian and to understand the different ways in which people tick. I mean, you know, the military's talked about is, the way in which they do things is fantastic and it's brilliant. And yes, there can be lots of fantastic things about it, you know, but there's also quite a lot of different things about it. And some of those aren't necessarily what you want or need. So to be able to help people just get out of one mindset into something else so that they can be successful and they can thrive is a really important thing. And we use placements to place people in industry a lot. And that can be fantastic for industry because it's almost like a try before you buy. you know, you get the opportunity to have somebody who the MOD is still paying for coming into your organization, which can be really brilliant for both sides in order to be able to have a look at each other. And the other way we do it is through community. And that community can be another veteran who's working in the organization who helps provide a bit of mentoring, or it can just be somebody who's part of an armed forces network and who's giving a bit of their own time in order to be able to support somebody who's on this transition journey, talking about the sort of transition in that, from the military to the civilian thing. And ultimately, our job is, it's a bit weird. I think we're a bit different to a lot of service charities because our focus is very much on making people successful civilians.
Yes.
And it's not about going, look at how ruined and broken these poor people are. Look at the terrible time in which they've had, you know, all of this. We're very much about celebrating the positives of that and harnessing this wonderful human potential that we've all paid for, and going, well, okay, how can we use that? Because if we allow them to be underemployed or unemployed or under a bridge or worse, a suicide statistic, then we're letting ourselves down as a nation for these people who've done a lot for us and they've still got an awful lot more to give. So anything that we can do to be able to help support them on that journey is fantastic. And for us, for me, it's incredibly rewarding. I mean, we get to do some cool stuff. So, we've sort of got support from the Royal Foundation through some of the big work we do. We're about to launch Mission Renewable, picking things up and helping people do skills transition into green jobs and green careers. You know, cool. The next big thing is all about, you know, whether it's offshore wind or solar or ground source heat pump engineering, you know, all of the rest of it. These are fantastic jobs for people for life. And that's really cool. You get to do that. The Invictus Games and all of the shiny side of stuff, all really exciting. It's the little low-level victories, which are still the thing that I enjoy and love the most. And it's one of the cool things about my job. So I do spend an awful lot of time doing PowerPoint and talking nonsense. But I get these lovely windows into being able to come alongside the charity's work. And it's still the joyous thing, really, is that I get to spend time with blokes like James.
Yeah.
Because that's a massive privilege. It's fantastic. And I adore that. So, yeah, I'm a lucky bloke.
That's nice. One of the questions I was going to ask you in this conversation was, you know, given the role that you have, what is it that makes you most proud? What is it, the thing that you enjoy most? And it sounds like it's that.
Yeah, it is. I mean, clearly I'm still a petrol head. I'm going to drive back in a Lotus Exige 430 Cup, the final ones off the line, the most extreme end of that. You know, was it 30 years of the Elise? You know,
it's the
ultimate incarnation of that, you know, and one of the very last ones that came off the line. Lotus, of course, are doing amazing things. They're you know, a whole injection of Geely can do and funding is allowing them just to take things on to the next level. I can tell you one Lotus anecdote that I just absolutely adore. You know, I mean, they've all been crapping themselves about how Amira was going to be received. I mean, that's a big roll of the dice for the company.
Huge.
And when you look at it objectively and you go, right, well, you know, there's no electricity involved in this thing at all. You know, it's an internal combustion launch. You know, is it going to work? And they produce this thing where, I mean, looks are subjective, aren't they? But, oh, my God, they built their website to be able to handle global ridiculous traffic. And it still got taken down.
Yeah.
They were hoping to take a certain level of deposits and they exceeded that by a country mile. That's really exciting times for the company. They need to almost double in terms of the number of people working in the UK as part of Lotus Group and particularly that home of sports car engineering. So it's great. They need great people of quality, you know, kind of where do they get them from? And part of it for them has been reconnecting with some of their armed forces roots. They've got a lot of veterans who are working for the company and people who are of that background or have got family or relations to. So for them to be able to tip into that audience as well has been really important. And so as we help them develop their armed forces engagement scheme, you know, a lightning conductor, something to really go, you know, hey, Lotus are here and they're doing something cool in that space. has been the production of the Poppy Car. And in the same way you were talking about what turns people on and what engages people, a Poppy Car is an art car. It's a moving art installation. And so we've got a bunch of beneficiaries who we'd reached out to who'd been involved in the previous two generations of the Poppy Car. First one we did was Mark IV MX5, the first one built as a race car in the UK. It's a 1.5 car that Chris Harris raced at Race of Remembrance. And then the next one was the SVR. We did the car that's on the side of the factory at Castle Bromwich and the SVR. And that was 2017. And we were supposed to give it back at the end of November 2017. And we still had it, I think, in 2020. So 32 beneficiaries did more than 180 miles an hour down the runway at Coningsby in that car. That was just absolutely what a glorious project that was. And to do another one was a bit intimidating because I think you've just got to kind of get that right. You don't want to produce something that's just a bit naff or a bit rubbish. It has to be right. And so we, you know, don't have any professional formal art designers or anything else like that who are involved in the making of it. It was a bunch of beneficiaries who are all using art therapy at different levels in part of their own recovery.
Right.
In order to be able to come up with it. And they came up with this incredible sort of chrome design. And the car turns up, the car is bright green. I mean, like...
As green as it can be.
As green as green can be. Oh, my God. So, and then a team of guys and girls had then done the livery of it. So it's covered in thousands of poppies that sort of cascade from the front round to the back. So the back of them is just coated in these... And these poppies, there are thousands on there, and each one is hand-placed. It's not a sort of printed wrap that's then stuck on.
Yeah.
So the car's kind of been wrapped in this chrome colour, and then it gets these poppies over the side. And then there was a lot of talk around names or faces or being able to do that in. And in the end, the thing that's been settled for is in the thousands of poppies, there are 635 poppies on there that are reflective. So they light up in the same way that the SVR's ones did. So the job of that car was to be safety car for Race of Remembrance, just gone. And that's a race that runs into the dark in Anglesey and then through the day, the following day. And it just looked amazing because it looks one way in daylight, you know, very chrome, very shiny, all of the rest of it. And then at night, and you see it picked out by the headlights of other vehicles and you just see these sort of 635 little poppies just kind of glowing on it. And it looks absolutely amazing. And it's just been the wonderful, most wonderful tool to engage with the really artistic designers and then the very practical guys who are learning to do livery. And we've got people who are now professionally working as, you know, over the generations, we've been putting people into livery jobs because it's just one of those growing industries that's kind of cool. And then it's also been this sort of lightning conductor for Lotus themselves to bring their veterans out of the woodwork so that we can use them, harness that community then to bring other people in behind them into this amazing British company that's doing incredibly exciting things in Hethel and now in the West Midlands as well.
Indeed, yeah, just a few miles from here, we've got one of their engineering centres, which is incredible.
It's really, really exciting, really exciting. I mean, it's one of the things about Caffeine and Machine, though, isn't it, sat here, is because you will always be sat in this place and there'll be cars sort of pulling up and with manufacturer plates on.
Yes.
You tend to see quite a few times. But also, as you sit here, you will spot there's an awful lot of people out of the car industry.
Yeah, completely.
Who come around here. But you always used to see it. I always like visiting car companies because you gauge the level of enthusiasm by the state of the car park where you walk through. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's all sort of stuff, you know, like Toyota at Halewood, you know, where some lunatic's got a 355 copy made out of an MRT, you know, which is one of the young lads on the line. But God, he's enthusiastic about it, and it's great, and it's just brilliant. I used to walk into Whitley, and you're just counting the sort of Mark 1 MX5s that clearly have had suspension work done.
Yeah,
E39 M5, my old one. I used to live in there as well. I used to get to go and visit it. This is one of those places where that community comes together and meets, isn't it? And you've got
it absolutely is. Yeah, it really is. This it's become such a mecca, really. People can rock up on their own in something fairly unusual. It doesn't have to be exotic. Just, as you say, a Mark 1 MX5. And you'll pull up in the car park, there'll be another one. You'll go and chat to the driver. Chances are you'll have a mutual friend you'll work in the same factory, or, you know, it is an incredible, incredible space.
And actually, if they go into the... So we talked about James Webley, but if go and walk into the sort of merchandising room downstairs here,
yeah,
there is an engine block, which is just gorgeous. It's a TVR, came out of TVR Power, six-cylinder engine block, which Webber's has done as a donation block, because we're the supported charity of Caffeine and Machine. And Caffeine and Machine support lots of charity throughout, lots of different pieces. We've sort of been underlying there since the beginning, used a lot by beneficiaries who both live locally and those who come in and use the place. And so if you're visiting Caffeine and Machine, go and find the find James Webley's engine block. It's a lovely piece of kit, and throw a quid in it. We'd be very grateful.
Absolutely, absolutely right. And also, if you head over into the first teepee, so the teepee that's opposite the main building, and look up, you'll see three very impressive chandeliers. That, again, is the work of James Webley.
Yeah, absolutely. And the pyramids with the TVs on it as well.
Yeah. Yes, of course.
Yeah, the TV pyramids and that. So, in fact, you can't get away from James Webley in this place.
Yes, yeah. If you've been to Caffeine and Machine.
Yeah, that's it. You've opened James a door Webley. Using... Yeah, or you've
yes,
hung
the
your
door
coat
handles,
up.
Of course.
Oh, God, yeah. No, yeah. We've worked out what he's doing now.
Yes, Speed Steel. And, well, Crux Works now, isn't it? That James is heading up, making some really, really incredible stuff.
Yeah, it's really cool. And then joining him up with, the Bad Obsession Motorsport guys, who are just fabrication gods, who we've done loads with over the course of the last year. They built a little race car under lockdown. We raced it this year, and then it raced at Race of Remembrance. I think there'll be a video due out about that kind of quite soon. But again, it's joining up communities and just, you know, I have the most fabulously short attention span. But I don't care what it is. It's sort of not my definition of interesting. It's if it turns people's lights on and it allows you to take somebody out of themselves and get them to open up, then it's a tool that we will happily use in order to be able to unlock things in our population. And the joyous thing about it is they just kind of make you really proud. So they go on and do fantastic things, and then you see them dipping back in and giving back into the organisation, not really to the organisation, but helping others come along behind them. And that sort of supportive community is absolutely what it's about. I must admit, the automotive community continues to be absolutely joyous. I think there's more increasing awareness of community, and particularly around mental health. And tonight, we're here on an evening where there's an I Love You Man, which is going on. I think we're getting much better collectively at talking about stuff that previously you wouldn't be prepared to talk about with other people. And it's just good on any number of levels.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, anywhere which is sort of driving community and helping people to be more honest about how they really are is a fabulous thing. So it's always been a really big theme through Caffeine and Machine as well. And it's such a big theme for us. So it's very cool. And we've got some beneficiaries here tonight, here to talk about it, here for Stephen Dobie, because his journey, and that was one with cancer, is something that there's a significant chunk of our beneficiary audience are on a similar kind of journey as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. No, you're right. It is such a natural partnership. The fact that it is the supported charity, Mission Motorsport is the supported charity of Caffeine Machine, and it is that one word, it's community, because that is the word I use for both. If I talk about Caffeine Machine, especially if you're describing it to somebody that has never heard of it, might not even be a car person, what is it? I always see it on your Instagram, what is it? And you say, the easiest way to explain it is it's a pub coffee shop where a community of people come together.
Yep.
They don't necessarily know each other, but it's that community that makes it amazing. You know, I've been here on Saturday and Sunday mornings, helping out, just helping with marshalling, you know, my events background, the guys get busy, I'll go and put on a high-vis jacket and help them out.
Yep.
And the amount of people that drive in and say, what's the event today?
Yes.
And the joy I used to get in saying, no, there is no event, it's you.
It's Saturday.
Yeah. Exactly.
You're
Saturday
here.
Saturday morning.
Hooray!
The reason this looks like an event is because of this amazing community of people that have chosen to come together.
And actually, do you know, I think one of the things that is why I hadn't understood it from the outset, but the thing which, Phil was articulating right from the outset, which he got right, was that it wasn't going to be exclusive or sneery or looking down on other sort of things. Because when we group together, we tend to do it around really quite small and exclusive kind of groups, where it's easy then to go look at the, you know, it's the People's Front of Judea and the Judean People's Front. and therefore, you know, my idea of sort of cool cars isn't the same as somebody else's. And so, you know, if I'm there in a 1970s 911, but somebody turns up in a Ratluck VW pickup,
yeah,
that's struggling to make its way up the very gentle incline in order to be able to get in, it's the fact that it's not judgy in any way at all, and you're just like, hey, that's somebody's pride and joy, and they love it, and through that they've got a social circle, and here, oh look, there's a whole load of them coming in, yay,
yeah.
But it's really cool. And that's what's brought a whole load of people together and their long-suffering partners, other halves who've been dragged along too. And what you then produce is somewhere that is just around automotive. And it's a much broader kind of pot than that. And it's and I think that's the thing that has just made it kind of really joyful without being judging. There's nothing worse, is
Absolutely.
There?
Absolutely. And that's where the similarity for me, again, as a bystander, that's how I look at Mission Motorsport, because it is this community of people. You don't have to have been, you don't have to have served to want to be part of it, help, to want to just keep that machine turning. And it is something as simple as turning up to an event, whether you're driving on a track day or you're there to help carry in some equipment for the setup of a show, and just sparking up a 5-10 minute conversation with one of the blokes just to talk nonsense about cars or to talk nonsense about the journey there. It's just that little... A little role in just turning on a little light bulb or just helping somebody come to terms with the fact that, oh, actually, civilian world's not that bad.
Yeah, completely. And ultimately, that's what we're interested in doing, is making them successful civilians.
Yeah.
It's not about looking back and, you know, trying to hark back to, let's connect you with your old networks and all of the rest of it and try and make your life feel like it did, because it's changed, you
that's
know.
That's it. Yeah, that's another chapter.
And if you find someone, you know, so... who's on a bridge above the M40 jumping off, it's not about going, well, what can we connect you to in your past? It's asking the questions about what's missing in your life that you were missing that sense of community and self and purpose and meaning, and how can we then connect you up with stuff? And if that means that it means developing a weird love of Ratluck VW Golf pickups, and for some reason I've chosen to pick on, but that's your thing, and through that you've got mates and all of the rest of it, and it's something that flicks your switches and gives you purpose, then mega, all power to you. It's Absolutely. Great. Yeah, no, really good.
The Driven Chat podcast in association with Paramex Digital.
And it's a community that everyone's so proud to be part of as well, isn't it? You know, I go to car shows or not even car shows, I'll be walking along the road and I'll see somebody in a Mission Motorsport hoodie. I want to go and talk to them, like, oh...
Yeah, yeah.
What's the story? Where'd you get that? And it might be someone that's just bought it from a show.
And I remember the first time we actually had merchandise of any description was the Silverstone 24-hour race in 2011.
Yeah.
No, it must have been 2012. Yeah, so it's Silverstone 24-hour. And I was used to, you know, we had 18 T-shirts, and I know that because that was all we could afford. So they were hanging on 18 people. And then all of a sudden... we had merchandise, and I was just really confused because I didn't know who anybody was anymore, because everywhere I looked, there were people walking around wearing Mission Motorsport stuff, and I no longer knew who everybody was. So it's amazing how these things kind of go full circle. But it's, quite strange looking back on 10 years, thinking, Christ, we've been doing this for a decade.
Yeah, I bet. I want to just mention, before we wrap things up as well, some of these key events. So you've mentioned... the Race of Remembrance a couple of times. So this is a wonderful event that I've been so lucky to have attended a couple of times. Just the most emotional, I mean, what a roller coaster for adrenaline, emotion, exhaustion, stress, weather. So you'll do a far better job of talking about the event as I will, but all I'll say is a day and night motorsport event at Anglesey in November, where it most of the time raiding sideways.
It's the most stupid idea ever. So Race of Remembrance, I think, this year for the first time has gone truly multi-venue. So we had go-karters racing at Thruxton. We had Brands Hatch stopping in order to do a service of remembrance, having servicemen in the pit lane, families involved, all of the rest of it, in amid a brick car meeting.
Wow.
And then there's this sort of 12-hour race that happens in Anglesey, 6 hours into the dark on the Saturday, and then the balance of the race across the Sunday, but interrupted by the thing that it's really all about. And we always sort of say Race of Remembrance is a remembrance service with a 12-hour endurance race just wrapped around it. But ultimately, it's about that remembrance service. Remembrance weekend, for those who've served, can be a bit weird, all the way through to being really, really difficult, like quite a difficult thing to engage with. And Race of Remembrance was not my idea. A guy called John Earp, who's a helicopter pilot, and was serving at the time, and we were gifted the opportunity to use Anglesey for a weekend in November. And John insisted that instead of just doing a bit of light instruction and going up there with a few cars and perhaps doing some of a track day around it or something like that, we were going to run a major 12-hour endurance race, which was, it still is an absolutely ridiculous thing. But, 53 teams on the grid sold out, had to apply for an extension to be able to put that many teams on the grid for this year. You know, manufacturers taking part. We had Morgan there, who were running the first ever hand control plus four with a load of our beneficiaries in it. You know, that ended up in the New York Times. You know, it's just extraordinary. So it works on loads of levels for us, but it, at its most glorious, it's a wonderful experience for the beneficiaries we have taking part. Mm. I think the karting is just wonderful. we had service teams as well as sort of those who've left and veterans who were karting alongside others down in Thruxton. That's going to get bigger next year. A Race of Remembrance is a glorious way for people to get engaged. And if you've got a race license and a bit of budget left at the end of the season, there are some amazing ways to go racing in things in ways that you would never believe, including for novices. We always will have novices there.
Yes, of course.
All the way through to the touring car drivers and the, Frankitties of this world who, come along and grace us with their presence. And Sir Chris Hoy and Chris Harris and all of the rest of it, it's become the way that if you're in the UK, that's how you go racing on Remembrance Weekend, is that it will have that stop, it will have that pause in the middle of it. But the Anglesey race is really compelling. ROR's a thing. I think we're going to run another national transition event, which is the Troops Track Day at Silverstone. I think we're shortly going to start advertising that as well. GP circuit Silverstone with using the wing effectively for a kind of career fair, but it's a networking event for veterans.
Yep.
To be alongside lots and lots of big companies coming along for that. But underneath, we'll run a kind of supercar, lunatic track car event out of the pit lane, putting people out on the GP circuit. That's the 24th of March. The Merrick Cox, who was a chairman of our board of trustees, who sadly died last year, we now have an annual event for him that sat in June in Goodwood, which I think is the 16th of June. The Invitational is September. I think we're just waiting to confirm exactly what date that is, which is lovely. And then into Race of Remembrance. But it's... and then everywhere in between. Team Sport, we run a national go-karting program. So normally every week or every other week, we'll be go-karting somewhere around the UK. Three Sisters, a little circuit near Wigan. We run a day there every month for people up in the Northwest. And racemakers for the British Grand Prix. We've got a team of about 40 or 50. It's quite a lot of families do that. Brilliant. Go and help people to enjoy the spectacle that is Formula One. Thanks to Darren Langeveld. There's normally a Nürburgring trip every year, and I think this year we're mixing that with a ridiculous Spa trek, Nürburgring to Spa, kind of
fantastic,
stupid cross-country walk, which is something that's been done before. But with a bit of a battlefield tour thrown in there as well, because that was
great.
Some significant, military stuff has happened in that part of the world, which the motorsport world has got no clue about. And
yeah, that's right.
Vice versa.
Francorchamps was Battle of the Bulge, wasn't it? It was the
completely. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And in fact, in 1941, that was where the Germans came through, which caught that's everybody right. by surprise. You know, there's no way you could advance through the Ardennes, and they proved that wrong. The axis of the advance was basically, if you draw a line between the Nürburgring and Spa, that's where they all kind of sail through. And you just don't know these days. When you drive through that part of the world, it's only the shape of the road signs that allows you to twig whether you're in Belgium or Germany. Mm. But if you go into the wood blocks, you find lines of Hinkelsteins, anti-tank obstacles and stuff.
Yeah.
you know, just sort of hidden away, you know, from the vestiges of this extraordinary past that we've had in Europe. So yeah, a bit of that thrown in as well. And the Lotus thing is just joyous. You know, I think there's lots more opportunities for people to be able to come there. And we're also seeing job-wise, just amazing opportunity for people across the country, not just in that sort of centre of manufacturing in the West Midlands, I think dotted about the place as well. Mm. There's some significant opportunities. I think because we set a world hypermiling record last year, we've developed a bit of an expertise for high voltage stuff, which is one of the things that exists,
of course, yeah,
everywhere across the military. It's one of the things that all of automotive desperately needs. The military, of course, use high voltage in exactly the same way that civilians do. Mm-hmm. But instead of referring to everything that's 49 volts or over as high voltage, they use it for things that are over 1,000 volts.
Right.
A slightly different risk profile, yeah, for military stuff as well. So the sort of 400 to 600 to 800 volt range of EVs isn't called high voltage by the military, despite the fact they use those sort of voltages for pretty much all sorts of things. So, yeah, just helping people with that translation bit so that they know how they're relevant. There's loads more of that sort of stuff coming. And one of the first things that we're doing is educating a load of motorsport rescue and recovery personnel, 120 of them, in a project that we're doing with Motorsport UK.
Great.
I think we're going to have that complete by mid-March, because all of a sudden you've got touring cars that have got hybrids in and things like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're suddenly cascading EV competencies into the motorsport world as well. So that'll keep us busy for a bit too.
It sounds like you have got quite a lot on this year. Quite,
yeah,
busy.
A little bit. Yeah. And then 1st of March, yeah, for our decade, whatever that means.
10 years. So there'll be people listening, I'm sure, from all different walks of life. There may be some guys and girls listening who perhaps could benefit from the charity.
Yeah, completely.
What's the easiest way for those guys to get in contact?
Yeah, drop us a line. It's go and have a look at the website. We've missionmotorsport.org, dead easy to find. Go and have a navigate around there, but get in touch with the team. If you're a beneficiary, is dropping a line, then anyway, by email or pick up the phone, and you will get through to somebody who can help. If they don't come back to you immediately, it's just noise. There are times of the year when we're really, really busy. It's a really small team. And delivering events can really mean that you peak and trough. Don't be offended if nobody's come back to you. It's not because we don't love you. It's just because we're busy. So persist. Just pick up the email, resend it, all of the rest of it, in order to rattle away and come through. And we'll do our absolute level best in order to be able to help. And for those who are interested in going, you know, how can I be part of this? This sounds really cool. I'd like to give some of my time. Yeah, absolutely. Drop us a line, and through the website is the best way. But we're also on all of the sort of social media platforms. You'll find bits and pieces, but talking to people is always the best way to make it happen.
I was going to say as well, utilize that community.
Yeah, totally.
If you don't have a direct in phone line website, you know, of course go through those official methods. But chances are, if you're ex-military, there'll be somebody, a friend of a friend perhaps, or a friend who's already got that contact in.
Yeah.
Likewise, for the other side, if you're listening thinking, I want to help, I want to either donate or give my time or do something, if you're in this circle of automotive, which chances are, if you're listening to this, you're
probably not going to be that far away from
you're going to know somebody.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, and we're after ins and insight into anywhere where there's opportunity for our beneficiary audience.
Yeah,
you know, you know, and for those who sit outside automotive industry as well, thinking, hey, this would be really good, then we can often steer you in the right direction if we can't help ourselves too. So we're sort of quite well networked into that whole service charity space, and also the transitional space as MOD tries to do its best for its people as they leave. Please, you know, get in touch and it would be fantastic. COVID has been really hard. You know, we were considering about 1/3 of our income comes from event-based stuff.
Yeah.
When that was wiped out overnight, I had to have some difficult conversations with trustees about how we used our not very large reserves, and we used them because global pandemic seemed like the right time to really lean into helping.
Yeah.
So we're hugely grateful for that. Anyone who, at whatever level, you know, if you're going to do a cake sale or go for a run, Bill Stein, UK, Aaron Quilter, who's just a joyous man, is going to be doing some running and taking his whole team out and doing some stuff during the course of this year. Hey, look, lean into us. We'd love to help you help us. And so anything that we can do to join that sort of stuff up, then please just drop us a line.
Perfect. And if you happen to be the managing director of a large automotive manufacturer that wants some blokes...
Well, you should know who we are by now, for yeah. goodness sake.
Otherwise, where, your PowerPoint's not working.
Where have you been? Pay attention, for God's sakes. Absolutely.
I'm going to refer to my list to make sure I've crossed off all the things. I mean, I still can't get over this 10-year thing. What on earth do you do next? Is it just a case of doing what you're doing and grow, or do you have any ambitions for the
The world has changed a ridiculous amount. So I think if the world still looks exactly the same, it would be, you would probably have got to the point of going, you should probably know everything by now, you know, are you not there yet? But of course, the world has changed to such a dramatic degree that there's still a lot of work to be done in that whole space of help, particularly helping people sort of leave and leave well. We're doing lots more work now with families than we used to. At the Festival of Speed, we hosted 53 family members from Scotty's Little Soldiers, which was a charity that was formed by a widow of a guy who was killed from my regiment in Afghanistan, which is all about helping bereaved kids where they've had a parent who's died in service. And we hosted, I think it was 53 family members to the Festival of Speed on the Saturday, which for me was just like, wow, that was brilliant to be able to do that for Scotty. And that was incredibly cool. I think the new opportunity, electrification, means that the whole world is going through turmoil and change. And wherever change is happening, that also brings opportunity. And so for us, unlocking that for our beneficiary audience is really cool. And then, of course, Mission Renewable is just really exciting. The government is telling us that these are jobs for life for people, you know, that will be the next generation of sort of green careers. So helping do that skills transfer and helping to take some of the lessons we've learned in automotive into new and exciting fields is really kind of cool. And Bista is a place that I didn't even mention. You know, we run a monthly event there, a Bista Heritage. But as you start to see that Bista motion, bigger vision for the place really kind of expand. There's some significant involvement for us there as well. We're already supporting an awful lot of people who've found work, employment, community, all of the rest of it through that place too. And so you'll kind of see more through there as well. So yeah, there's enough to be keeping me entertained, certainly in the short term, which is joyous. But I'm very grateful for the opportunity to come and have a chat, mate.
Oh, well, pleasure. It's something we've talked about for quite a long time, in the idea of getting you in. And yeah, this is proven like a natural spot for us. We would love to do more. Any events, anything that comes up in the year, just let's keep in touch, because why not come down and maybe
Happy
do
days.
Some live podcast recordings and talk to some cool people, and just as I always have been, wanting to be as involved as possible, really, because it is such a special thing, and it's something I'm very proud to say I'm a very, very, very tiny moving part of.
It's been brilliant, and you've really lent in and helped out as well. During some sort of pivotal times, which has been joyous. So 1st of March at Thruxton, here you go, you're formally invited, John.
Fantastic.
We need to see you there.
That would be
really cool, and let's see how 2022 pans out.
Absolutely, and beyond.
Wholeheartedly.
Jim, thank you so much for your time. Again, just to remind you, dear listener, if you want to be involved, if you want to help, if you want to have a conversation, if you want to just learn more about the charity, missionmotorsport.org is the website you can go to. Have a look on all the social platforms. If you want to follow Jim, because he's occasionally quite funny on Twitter.
Occasionally.
And has an amazing handle, @tankslider.
Yeah, there's a story behind that.
Do you want to tell the story?
No. What is it? I did a lot of extra duties at one point. Having established that, you could drift Challenger 1 really well on cobbles in the snow, which was fine. And I had an unfortunate accident. Well, nearly an accident. Everyone was fine. No spaniels were hurt during the making of the brigade commander deciding that he was going to go for his walk on the tank park and finding... the orderly officer who was supposed to be in charge on a long weekend where everyone else had gone home doing skids in a tank with a couple of corporals who were helping me out to be able to do it. Yes. Tanks Ladder sort of then had followed me at different levels, but it became a Twitter handle kind of early on and is stuck. That's pretty good.
I didn't know that story.
Yeah, there you go. Like there is a much more full version that you can have at some point over a beer, mate.
Yeah, that sounds good. Fantastic. As ever, if you would like to engage with us, if you'd like to leave a review or get in contact with the show, if in any way that we can be a kind of middleman to the charity, you can get in contact with all the usual methods. Email address podcast@drivenchat.com, and of course, direct messages on any of the social media feeds, all of which are currently popping off at the moment. We seem to be growing at a fantastic rate, which is really exciting. So thank you so much for listening, both to this, but also to the back catalogue, to all of you that are engaging on the social platform, sending us emails, subscribing on YouTube, writing comments, all that sort of stuff. It's very, very, very exciting and enables us to do more of this wonderful stuff, like talking to Jim Cameron of Mission Motorsport.
Thanks, mate.
Thank you very much for your time. We will speak to you, dear listener, next week.
The Driven Chat podcast in association with Paramex Digital. You dream it, we bring it to life. Find out more at drivenchat.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Oh, wow. You've made it to the end. The very end. And it's John Markar here again, reminding you that this podcast, the Driven Chat podcast, has now run its course and has come to an end. To find the new format, search the Driven podcast in your preferred podcast app or head on over to the website driven.site to find some quick and easy links through to the new episodes in the new formats on your preferred apps. Thanks. Bye.